resources that these police were, that they're trying to bring onto the campus, but they were never acknowledged. And so, again, when I say that we need to basically empower our grassroots organizations, we need to bring more power to them so that that hardcore profiling policing doesn't have to take place in our communities. We don't need it, but at the same time, we won't need it once we unify and identify resources that are already there. And we can't suppress those resources because we have brands that have value or credibility or are safe and partnered with the police. We're protesting the protest that's happening with the police because we are protesting the police. You know, so the only way to circumvent that is to become powerful within our communities so that they don't have to come there and violate our civil liberties.
I'm speaking with Teresa Redford. This is Kathleen Stevenson. This is a program in reaction to the lack of indictment in Ferguson. It's 11 a.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And if you want to join in and make a comment or ask a question of Teresa, the number is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And I believe we have Jersey on the phone. Jersey?
Thank you. Thank you, Teresa. Thank you for KBOO and everything you do for the community in this vital that Portland has been organized the way it is for the purpose and directly support from you. Most importantly, I think we've been down the road enough that we actually know what to do. Basically, the community police or the police review boards that unfortunately have been all lopsided with the police for so long have worn out their welcome. They're a little less now than they used to be, but still, I think we have to really define it. And I think the previous caller nailed it right in the head. We know what to do. We're done really talking. We have to talk in terms of being all organized on the same page, but I'd like to say very clearly what has to be done very definitely. We have to have a referendum that says that we have a community police review board that has no police on it, although they can be advisory and they can come on, they can talk and we can have them as witnesses, or they can come and see what we're doing, but they cannot be the voting body on an area represented by the citizens. They have to remind them, and we all have to remind them, they work for us. It's not,
that's right,
we are their servants, which they, of course, you know, work for somebody else, unfortunately. We have to clearly define that, and we have to make a unified effort. I think every city or every state across the country, in a unified organizing way, should all be running referendums like this, because we need to have them everywhere so that they don't lump their resources on the opposition against isolated cities and states. And this will also flush out, you know, some of the worst in terms of politicians who are willing to stand up for this. We can reach out to the policemen's unions, but they have to understand the terms that we're declaring it our tax money paying their pensions. And by the way, if Wilson is resigning, I want to know if he's getting his pension. And I would hope that that the Brown family, of course, is going to do some civil action. So if there's anything else you'd like to ask me on that.
I'm in full agreement with you. But the thing is, and what we have to realize, is that there are populations in our city that don't know what to do, and there are you guys that do, and that's what we're trying to do now, is bring us together, because the umbrellas that we've been going to don't offer that refuge, you know. And so right now, because of this movement and what Don't Shoot Portland has been doing, is we're extending the olive branch to say, hey, if you have resources, if you have education, if you have knowledge of systematic you know, defiance or whatever you might want to call it, but self-sufficiency, we need that knowledge so that we can distribute that information and get everybody on the same page, because we don't want to be dependent on the system anymore.
Exactly.
It's not, it doesn't care about us.
Well, thank you for being out there, and definitely keep to your faith there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jersey. And Teresa, we have a few minutes left. What kind of things do you think that are important to say to the community at this point?
Well, to the community, we just need to start taking the opportunity to be responsible and accountable for our future. We have a society, and in our society, we have the privilege of choosing our battles. We have the privilege of shutting off things that we don't want to be bothered by. But until it happens to you directly, you're not gonna want people not to take action. So you have to support those movements. You know, even if you're not able to come out to an education forum, put money into the opportunity for us to pay rent at a venue where we can do it. Offer to make copies of information so it can be distributed. Do your part in any small way that you feel comfortable with, but don't just sit back on the sidelines and watch. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, when we talk about unity, it comes in any form or shape that you can offer it, and it's all necessary. You know, whether it's constructive criticism or not, it's going to help us. It's going to help us develop, and we need to build that communication. So we just want everybody to be involved. If you're wanting to do something, if you feel that this was an unjust decision, it's cool to put it on Facebook, but actually take action. You know, you might want to commit one day out of the month. Find out what you can do with that commitment. It might be 1 hour or 15 minutes. It might just be a ride, but do something to help push for change. Do something physical and active.
I'm going to try to fit in a call or two more. Teresa, we have James on the line. Go ahead, James, your question or comment for Teresa, please.
My name is James, and I was a University of California Berkeley student back in the early 90s when they had the Rodney King riots. And, you know, over the last 20 years, as much as I've wanted to help, I feel that, you know, we don't really live in a democracy anymore. I mean, we really live in an oppressive oligarchy. And I really appreciate your comments today about just doing what you can. But how can we really do anything at all, you know, when it comes to the amount of economic and social pressures that come upon individuals just to survive? You know, and I think in general, we are all Rodney Kings. We are all these police officers in one form or another. And, you know, what can we really do to affect change? And is there even a way to affect change other than to, you know, rip it all down and build it from the start?
Well, thank you, James. Teresa, do you have an answer for that?
Well, if we knew the answer, we'd be there. The only thing that I can say is we have to walk the walk. We have to take action. We have to do what we can, and our consciousness will guide us. You know, the thing is that the reality of the situation is we look at each other in different ways. I took a deadly force training with the Multnomah County Sheriffs one time, and in the training, we were supposed to see if we were going to accidentally shoot someone that was unarmed because of our fear. And one of the things that I got out of that training, I didn't accidentally shoot anybody. The people that I shot in the training were actually, you know, there was no other way. But some of the officers, their reflections were that, you know, we didn't shoot this guy because he could have been my uncle, or this guy could have been my auntie. And the same reaction came from some of the people of color. If they were familiar with the person, then they had a decent respect for their life. And so they chose to be conscious when they made the action that could cause them death. I don't know how to legislate that feeling. I don't know how to legislate that type of emotion of inclusion or humanity to someone that doesn't have it. But I do think that we need to start guiding our youth. When we talk about early childhood education, I think that we can influence our children to stop seeing color. I don't believe in segregation, and I don't like when I go to places and you have the black here and you have the Hispanic here and you have the Asian there, and everybody's fighting for crumbs. Which I would say are the resources that are available to them to get a level playing field. I think that we need to start looking things on the level of what they are. If we have a poverty issue, let's deal with the poverty issue. If we have an illiteracy issue, let's deal with the illiteracy issue. If we have a homelessness issue or a discrimination issue, let's deal with it based on the issue and not the person, and segregate them in the face of society. Because a lot of the racist rants that I see are coming from people that are saying, why do we have to keep taking care of those people? You know, and there's a lot of people that get paid for taking care of certain people. We need to just take care of people.
I don't know if the caller's still there. Is the caller still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. As a white male here in Portland, what can I do to help people of color do what they need to do to affect change. If you gave me one thing that I could do right now, what would that be?
You would need to send me your resume so I could see what you're good at. And then I'll call you to educate us on that so that we can build the skill set needed. If you're an engineer, I'd say let's create a curriculum that's focused on children that
Well, I'm a nurse practitioner, so there you go.
Oh, absolutely. That's what you can do.
So should I go into the place of color and open up a clinic? That's true.
Well, you come to the people that are looking to educate their children, and we create a curriculum to introduce that industry to the children. They can get out of poverty with that type of focus.
I agree.
You know, and once you clear 100%. The poverty issue, you clear the issues with crime.
I agree. I think you need to do that more. I mean, if there's anything I can do, please let us know over the airwaves so that I can be a part of the solution.
Yeah, if you can go to the Don't Shoot Portland page and attend the training today, even if you don't need the training, you can sign up so that we can partner with you and so that we can develop that relationship.
Oh, well, just let me know offline. I'll be willing to help you out.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So, caller, maybe if you stay on the line, our engineer can get your phone number and we can try to connect you with whatever information we can get. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Teresa. And maybe we can go over the way that people connect with Don't Shoot Portland again, and the fact that we're going to find out the gathering space for the training tonight and make it available on our website, and our receptionist will have that information too. So can you go over that again, Teresa?
Uh-huh. And actually, we do have an email, so people can email me directly at don'tshootportland@gmail.com.
Okay.
We'll get that email, and if you go to Facebook, you go to Don't Shoot Portland, and it'll take you to a like page, which is a group, and there's also an event that might pop up that'll say NVDA Call to Action Training Don't Shoot Portland, and those are both on Facebook, and those are both really active pages. That can lead you to anybody in our group. There's about 5 organizers that we work with, so all of us are accessible on both of those mediums.
Great. And so the training that you mentioned earlier, it's at 5:30, is that right?
That's right. And we'll be updating the location shortly here. We're just waiting for a confirmation from one of the 2 locations.
Okay, and if you can send me that, I will put that out as best I can on KBOO.
Awesome. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you, Teresa. And also, I want to mention, this is the other event. It's not related to what Teresa's doing, but there is a march and rally today. People of Portland stand in solidarity with the people of Ferguson. The rally is today at 4 p.m. That's at the Central Precinct at Southwest 3rd and Madison. And that's through the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. And the phone number is 503-287-0261. And we have that information here for you if you want to call KBOO if you didn't catch all of that. Teresa Rayford, I want to thank you so much for being on the phone and discussing these issues. It's always great to hear from you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. And can I just say one quick thing?
Oh, yeah.
Our protesters did not loosen the horses in the Pearl District last night. I saw the PDX police scanner had put out on their social media that protesters tried to burglarize and release horses last night. The police followed us as we marched peacefully through the streets for several hours, and we did not do that. So anybody that thinks we don't love animals, I hope that they understand that and that they get this information.
Great. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Teresa. Teresa Rayford, Don't Shoot Portland. If you have questions about this, you can give us a call here at KBOO. We'll try to get you any information we have. And you are listening to a special program that's in reaction to the lack of indictment in Ferguson and the lack of grand jury indictment. We have one more interview to go. We're going to take a break, and after that, we will have an interview with another representative of the group, the national group, PICO. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned at 11:30 today. It will be Art Focus.
meantime, we are staying on top of a developing story this morning. A local 18-year-old is shot and killed by police in Ferguson. Family members joined by protesters are demanding answers. News 4's Brittany Noble is live at Ferguson Police Headquarters, where officers have indicated they could release more information later today. Brittany.
Ferguson confirms they shot and killed a suspect. According to Mike Brown's mother, that suspect is her 18-year-old son. She said he was shot on Canfield Drive and left laying in the street for hours. People are angry with police because they aren't releasing details of this case.
My hands up. They shoot me down. Face first into the hot ground. Don't shoot my last words, yeah, my last sounds. This wasn't me, no, it wasn't, it was Mike Brown. 2014, Emmett Till still getting killed. Mama wishing that a kid was still here. When the police get paid to shoot us and kill, while we watching our brothers and sisters' blood spill. In the middle of the street, we supposed to keep the peace, but y'all can stay violent, wonder why we start a riot. Cause we angry and none of us like it. Cause we angry and none of us like it. Seems like nothing changed since the damn 60s. Feels like the Matrix, we repeated history. You can't call this another unsolved mystery. Another black man getting killed by the police.
Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up,
but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. But they shoot, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. But they shoot, but they shoot.
This wasn't a dream of Dr. King. This wasn't the breath of Malcolm X. This wasn't the thoughts of Rosa Parks. This wasn't a vision at all. They say protect the service decree. For who, not you? Definitely not me. Now ask Sean Bell, ask Eric Gardner, ask Oscar Grant, ask John Crawford, ask their mothers, and ask their fathers, ask their sons, and ask their daughters. Look them in the eyes and tell them why they died. And tell them why you didn't care about none of their lives. And tell them why you killed them in the day and the night. Tell them why, tell them why. We want to know why. Tell them why you shot them so many times. Tell them the reason you respect our lives. Tell them.
Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up.
But they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. But they shoot, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot.
Up next, we hear an interview with Reverend Alvin Herring, Deputy Director of Faith and Formation and Director of Training at PICO, a national network of faith-based community organizations working to create innovative solutions to problems facing urban, suburban, and rural communities. Kathleen Stevenson spoke with him earlier today about the Ferguson grand jury's failure to indict Officer Darren Wilson.
If you could tell people what a PICO national network is and what kind of work the organization does, that'd be great.
Yeah, so the PICO national network is a network of community organizing agencies in about 150 U.S. cities, 19 states, and over 2,000 congregations. We organize in the faith communities all across the country around issues such as mass incarceration, living wage, health care, immigration reform. And we've been in the Ferguson area since Michael Brown was murdered by Officer Darren Wilson, off and on for the last 100 days.
You have been at Ferguson during some of the past months?
Yes, I'm here now. Been here every month, not every day, but every month since Michael Brown was slain by Officer Wilson.
Can you talk a little bit about your own reaction to the failure to indict Officer Wilson last night when that was announced?
Well, I think my reaction was like so many people here in the local area and so many people around the country. We were obviously outraged, believed that justice was not done in this case. The bar to indict a person by a grand jury is not the highest legal bar to try to surmount, and we believe that there was sufficient evidence, including a very compelling eyewitness evidence that should have resulted in an indictment. Obviously, the prosecuting attorney didn't bring charges to the grand jury, and they were left to try to figure that out on their own. So the decision to not indict leaves many, in deep pain and deep sadness for this family. They were looking for answers and placed their belief and trust in a legal system that has not a great track record of delivering justice for young men of color. But nonetheless, with last night's announcement, all of the pain and the anguish that this community has felt over the last 108 days suddenly came to the surface, and people reacted in ways that are consistent with being outraged, acted in ways consistent with being traumatized, and certainly there were some who acted in ways that were irresponsible, but for the most part, you know, there were peaceful protests here on the streets of Ferguson for the last 108 days, mostly led by young people. And those young people were out on the streets last night and were met with the same kind of police response that left so many of them tear-gassed and shot with rubber bullets back in August, again last season.
And were you out observing the streets last night?
I got in very, very late last evening and met up with a number of our colleagues who were out on the streets, some of the young people that we've been working with. We've been here on West Florissant since this morning. Law enforcement won't allow access to the street, but we've been, sort of walking the perimeter. We're here at Greater St. Mark's Church now, waiting on an announcement from the family. And the mood here, obviously, today is very somber. People are very subdued, obviously still, in a great deal of pain. Events of last week were very traumatized for this community, and those of us who are members of the clergy continue to pray, but also continue to work to organize the voice of everyday people of faith. We believe their voices are important right now.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a bit about why this decision and this police killing is so crucial and has so much meaning for the whole nation?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that make this so powerful and so compelling. Obviously, Michael Brown murder at the hands of Officer Wilson is not an isolated incident, but over the last few years, especially, there have been a number of celebrated cases where young men of color have been, many of them unarmed, shot by the police. Sean Bell in New York, Oscar Grant in Oakland, and of course, although this case with Trayvon Martin didn't involve the police, it was another instance where an unarmed black youth was slain, and no one has been held accountable, even though in Trayvon's case and in Oscar Grant's case, the assailants were tried, the outcome still left many feeling that justice is never available for people of color, and that life doesn't matter. I think the other thing that makes this particular instance so important is that the young people in this community have been leading these really powerful and imaginative and peaceful protests for 100 days. They've made it very clear that their intention was to stir the passions of good people of faith everywhere who believe that conditions that these young people are living in are intolerable and need to be changed, need to be addressed. And I think because they were so determined to be peaceful and so determined to reach out to as many people in the community with a message that there's a need to work on the systemic issues, I think that makes this not just for Ferguson, but for the nation.
And what kind of message do you think it gives them about the legal system?
Well, I think that the message that many will take away from this is that the legal system, like so many other institutions in this country, doesn't or isn't yet able to best represent the interests of people of color. I think that they'll come away from this feeling that young men of color especially continue to look for protection and support, fair treatment in the legal system, but often are met with a system that is leveraged against them. I think that they'll come away feeling that they are alone and isolated, and that their rank and file colleagues and other American residents and citizens don't really care about them and their lives. Certainly, you know, we believe that this situation gives us all a moment to pause and to examine both our own hearts, but also the institutions that govern us, and continue to insist that they govern us fairly and equally and justly.
What are you, or what is the PICO National Network calling for now?
So the PICO National Network is calling for a number of things. One, that we all participate in a period of mourning, that we have seen not only the loss of Michael Brown's life, but we've had a number of these young people who have been jailed. A number of them have been shot with rubber bullets and tear gas. We've seen even law enforcement hurt in some way, and that we all ought to take a moment, pause, mourn the loss of quiet and the loss of peace in this community. And certainly, you know, we believe that we ought to mourn the failure of the system again to do all that it can to protect the lives of young people of color. I think we're also calling, though, that people of faith everywhere remember that our faith compels us to always be about love, always be about the elevation of love in public such that it results in justice for everyone. We are encouraging people of faith everywhere to, you know, educate themselves about the issues that are important to Ferguson at this time, and find ways that they can involve themselves in making change happen.
Well, I was just wondering if you saw the role of the federal government bringing any kind of resolution or better outcome in this case of Officer Wilson.
Well, we know that the Justice Department is still examining both the shooting of Michael Brown and also examining closely local law enforcement, and we certainly hope that that examination, that inquiry will result in change. I mean, you have a legal system here in this area that has consistently arrested, detained, jailed young people of color for a long time. And many here believe that it was only a matter of time before things boiled over, and that people could only, you know, withstand the vicissitudes and challenges of that kind of isolation for so long. So we're hoping that the federal inquiry will result in some change, but frankly, a lot of folks at this point right now are not optimistic that it will be. And we certainly are appealing to the president. We're appealing to the Justice Department. You know, this was the first night of reaction to the release of the verdict and decision by the grand jury. There are many more nights to come, and there's still a need for justice, still a need to, you know, change things on the ground here, still a need to protect the rights of peaceful protesters, certainly still a need to make the community secure and safe for everyone. We continue to hope that both our president and the Justice Department will do even more than they've done so far.
Reverend Alvin Herring, is there anything else that you'd like to add to our conversation?
I would. I mean, I think that, you know, the situation first, and like so many situations these days, get cast into black versus white and white versus black. There's certainly those who will try to bring a partisan interpretation to it. But let me say that the parameters of this situation are compelling for those of us who still believe in justice. A young man is dead. His parents are grieving. The community of young people are grieving along with his parents. Our justice system is broken, and we all know that. Regardless of our racial background, regardless of our class or our status, we know that this system is broken. And unless we are prepared to confront that, unless we are prepared to seek each other's support, unless we are prepared to speak to the underlying systemic issues, situations such as what we're experiencing here in Ferguson will not go away. There's a reckoning coming. We must change things in America. And I would hope that people of faith would feel today that change needs to begin today, and it needs to begin with them.
Thank you so much, Reverend Alvin Herring. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You're welcome. God bless you all and your listeners.
That was Reverend Alvin Herring, Deputy Director of Faith and Formation and Director of Training at PICO, a national network of faith-based community organizations working to create innovative solutions to problems facing urban, suburban, and rural communities, speaking with KBOO's Kathleen Stevenson. Up next is Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, open daily December 17th through December 24th for the festival.